Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening and joining me once again on the Be a Better You podcast. I am here today with another guest for you, and I'm really excited about this topic today because this is not something that we've ever talked about on the podcast. And I know a lot of people struggle with exactly what my expert has come on to talk about. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you. Tell us who you are, who you serve, and then we'll get right into it.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I am Laura Folks, and I am a certified holistic health coach. And I work with people who typically know what they should be eating, but have a really hard time sticking with it, and they're not sure why. So we really get into the root of what takes them off track with their eating and how that's actually protective, which we'll get into a lot more today. And the ultimate goal is to transform their relationship with food so that they can break free from the battle that they might be feeling like they have had with their body and themselves and around food.
That is so fantastic. I'm so excited about this. And partly why I thought this would be such a great topic is because, I've worked with a lot of women who have experienced emotional abuse, trauma, toxicity, and programming, right? All the way back since childhood. And you're familiar with that. You can talk to that as well. But that, food is something we can't live without, right? We have to have it to survive and live. So when we use it in different ways, like for instance, to cope or to deal with trauma or experiences and things like that that we've had, it's time to address these issues because I feel like personally for me, and a lot of probably other people who are listening, it's something that we don't always think about as helping us become a better version of ourselves. And the name of the podcast is Be a Better You, right? So what can we do, right? It's all about what's going on in our mind, but also what's happening in our body. We have to take care of this body. So tell us a little bit about the story that got you to where you are today to become this health coach that you are.
Yeah, well, what I'll start with, and I'll share a bit about my story, but just to share from what you were just talking about. So I was bullied in middle school and high school, and I never connected at all how that had shaped my relationship with food. I never thought that that actually, I thought it just made me stronger, which it did, and it served me in many ways. And I also didn't realize how much my relationship with food was actually impacted from that situation. So I just wanted to share that before I get into my story, just because of a lot of traumas, whether they're big T or small T traumas, and different things that happen in our life can impact our eating and our relationship with food without even realizing it, because food is there and there's so many different reasons that we turn to food, which we'll get into a lot more, but just wanted to share that sometimes we may not even realize why our relationship with food is the way it is, even if we don't think of ourselves as a traditional emotional eater. So, as I mentioned, my story really started around being bullied. And again, didn't realize it. I struggled with my weight since the age of 12, and which is really looking back around the time I started to get bullied because it was in middle school and high school. And went to my first weight loss program when I was 13 with my parents and would do all of the diets, lose weight, gain it all back plus more. And ultimately in 2006 or 2008, I was able to lose 60 pounds. It took me three different approaches. And it took me a few different years as well to do that. And at the time I was working in advertising, was maintaining my weight for a good 4 years or so, and would find people coming to me asking me for advice and guidance around how did I stay so disciplined? How was I keeping up my willpower as they were going through their journeys as well? So when I started to think about what I wanted to do after advertising, it took me a while to figure out what that was. And I just kept thinking about that memory of people coming to me and being super passionate about that. And then I learned about health coaching. So I decided to get my certification from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. And at that time, I was really excited because I, even though I had been maintaining my weight for 4 years, I'm like, okay, having more information is going to help so that I can stay on track or not have to fluctuate it so much with my weight because I had been maintaining, but I would really do what I call work the system, where I'd eat well for a while, say screw it, eat whatever I wanted, have to rein it back in again to lose any weight I had gained, and then get back on track. So I thought that having more information was going to get me out of that cycle. What ended up happening is I ended up gaining a couple of pounds, was introduced also to, at the same time, to a health coach who had had her business for about 6 years or so at that time, and was really connected with her just to learn more about her experience with building her business and what it was like to be a health coach full time. As I started talking to her about the business stuff, I learned about her process called Truce with Food, and that's when a light bulb kind of went off, and I was like, oh, my relationship with food is kind of strained and stressful and doesn't actually have to be this way. Like, I thought that's just the way life was because it had been that way since I was a teenager. So I started working with her, going through her process, Truce with Food. And that's when I realized that that was the work that I really wanted to do with people. And because it had such a big impact for me, and it's not just about the food, like, there's so much. So, like I said before, there's so many much meaning behind the foods that we eat. And when we can start to identify, when I was able to connect that being bullied was really still kind of controlling me in a way around food as an adult, it was like, oh my God, there's actually a good reason that I am in this cycle. So I can go into a lot more detail around that, but I'll save some more of that for
Yeah. Okay. Well,
a
yeah. Thank you
conversation.
for sharing that. You know, it's always interesting to know where people come from, how they end up where they're at. And I think we all have a story to share. So one, I'm so sorry that that happened to you as a young, developing girl, and that's a really tough time to go through that, especially with your peers and people bullying you, and nobody wants to have to deal with that. And I'm sorry that you had to go through that, but I am also very excited to see where you're at today and how you've overcome all of that, which brings a lot of hope to people who are listening. So, you mentioned this, you said this a couple of times about your relationship with food and this truce with food. So, can you just elaborate on that, what that really means so that people can kind of understand what you're saying when you say like the relationship with food? Because some people might be just hearing this for the first time, like, I don't know, like, I have really had a relationship with food, I just eat it.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was like too, because we get into this automatic cycle, pilot almost, of just like eating and not even knowing why. So for me, I would kind of have what I explain as like a fog coming over me, where I would come home typically from work after having a stressful day. And I would, whether it was before dinner or after dinner, or whenever it would happen, I would crave something salty and then go for something sweet and then something salty again. And I was constantly had a little fear even around when I left the house in the morning. What happens if I don't have food around? Or what if I am out and I get hungry? Where am I going to get something to eat? Also overthinking food choices, beating myself up after having a binge, feeling like I needed to get back on track and okay, I'll start my diet tomorrow, and really focusing on what can I do to get back on track and lose any weight that I had gained. So it was just an exhausting cycle. And so I hear from a lot of people that their relationship with food, when I ask, like, what is your, how would you describe your relationship with food? For me, I would describe mine, it used to be strained. And some people say it's like a love-hate relationship. Some will say it feels abusive because they will eat, but then they beat themselves up afterwards or have a lot of guilt or shame around that. So that's what I'm talking about around our relationship with food. And ultimately, where we want to get to, it's going to look different for each person, but having a truce with food is really not feeling triggered by it anymore. So having more neutrality around it, not having our worth, our value be tied to our eating or our weight as well. And just being able to choose, like feel more in control around it and more in choice, instead of feeling like we don't have much, like we feel controlled by it. We want to be in control of that, and not control in terms of feeling like we have to really restrict and stuff like that. It's not like that. It's the day that I was able to walk by a kitchen full of donuts that were left over in the office kitchen. And I was just walking by. I'm like, I feel like having some carrots. I had to pinch myself. I was like, what? Who am I? What has happened? But that's what happens for has happened for some clients as well, where they think they love food so much and go traveling and like to try all these different foods and stuff and used to build their travel around food. And it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the food when you are traveling and stuff. It's being able to not feel like that's like the food is the star. It's more of the accessory.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that because the first thing that came to my mind is how, especially in our culture in the United States, a lot of our events and holidays and celebrations are centered around food. It's like, oh, we're gonna have a party. What are we gonna have for food? Who's gonna bring what? What's gonna be on the menu? Blah, 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 right? Like, it's always like the star. The food is the star, which is what you were saying. And how do we get that back to a neutrality place? So, what do you think? Like, where does this start? Okay, because you know that I talk all about the subconscious mind and programming and like all of that stuff. But where do you think this relationship, when it kind of gets to the point where it's maybe an unhealthy relationship with food or a not so neutral relationship? Because I don't know how I really categorize that. But where do you feel like that kind of goes awry for people? Or I mean, maybe it's different for everyone.
It is definitely different for everybody because it depends on the life circumstances. But if we think of food, it's really meant to satisfy primal needs of energy, orientation, comfort, and connection. And so even when you're talking about those parties, right? And food is the center of that. When we think of energy, orientation, comfort, and connection, which of those show up at parties? The comfort and connection, probably most likely, right? Even orientation to some extent. And if you're more of an introvert and you're around people, it could even be a source of energy for you as well. So if we think of the way that we look at when things start to go awry, there's usually some form of like our belonging is at threat. And so think about me being bullied. My belonging was at threat. Like I was literally being rejected, right? In those moments. And so if we think about as kids, we don't necessarily have we're not able to get the full context of what's happening around us. So we internalize different situations as about us and we make meaning of that. And that's what we call developing a story. And the story is meant to protect us and does in many ways, but also there are times and we carry that story with us. So as I did my own work on to get to my truth with food, the first story that I uncovered was around not wanting to be misunderstood. And think about bullying, I was consistently felt misunderstood because I was being judged for my body. And from there, the meaning that I made of being misunderstood was I was being rejected, I would fail and would end up alone. And there were times where that literally did happen, like the time I went to go sit with my friends in the cafeteria. And I walked up to them for lunch and they were like, what are you doing here? You can't sit here. And I had been friends with these girls for a couple of years, but I was literally rejected. So that just reconfirmed my story. But then what would happen is throughout my life, I wasn't able to discern when I was really being rejected versus, and at times I was really being rejected. And then other times it felt like there was a risk of rejection. And I wasn't discerning whether the risk of rejection was the same threat, level of threat. It just emotionally felt like it was the same level of threat. So logically, I may have known that an email from if my an email was misunderstood from a client or a coworker when I was working in advertising, that I wasn't really going to be misunderstood, but emotionally it felt that same, I felt that same risk of like, oh, I could get fired. And so that's where that eating would come up, where I would have the sweet to salty, the sweet to salty binges. And it was because I was still reacting to that same past story today.
Yeah. And it's interesting how we tell ourselves stories, right? Without really questioning those stories. And like you said, as a kid, you didn't really know how to, or didn't have the ability to figure this all out, right? It's not until much, much later that you become an adult and you start to kind of put these puzzle pieces together. But, the story is oftentimes the thing that keeps us stuck in whatever behavior patterns or whatever emotional patterns that we're in and or combination thereof. So what is, I guess, because you had mentioned before, and I really want to get into this, is like the protection piece of this, right? Because I know that's a big thing. It's not like everybody has the tools, right? You can literally Google how to lose weight, how to, stop going on binges, how to, eat healthier, go, there is a million things that you could do in Google to find out how to lose weight or how to be healthier, right? But if you're not figuring out what's going on inside of you, then chances are the patterns will continue, the emotional things to keep coming up, the connections to the past are presenting themselves in the future, just like what you described as, the bullying situation and then the situation in advertising. So, what do you feel like when we're talking about the protection and maybe the kind of the root stuff here? Let's get into that.
Well, first I want to share too with the story piece of it is a lot of times it's unconscious and we don't even realize we have a story. Like I didn't even know that this was underlying at all. Like I didn't know that I was feeling misunderstood in those moments. So the first step is even to know we have a story. And once we can identify what that story is, then it takes it from we are subjected to the story, and then we bring it more. Once we identify what it is, we make it more of an object, and it's something outside of ourselves that can change. Because before that, it feels like, oh, this is just the way life is. This is just who I am. This is just how things are. But then it empowers us more when we can see, like, oh, this is what's actually happening. I have literally had clients in the first session, once we identify what their story is, they're like, oh my God, I feel like I have shed this weight I've been carrying, even though their weight didn't change because they've been carrying, they were able to actually put language to the story.
That's amazing.
So I just wanted to clarify that for a second. And then in terms of, I went off track, so
Like,
remind me your question.
just be, as far as like the roots of this stuff and like how maybe there's some protection measures and things that we're putting in place. And, because our brains are wired for survival and connection and things like that.
So, the story really is a huge piece of that protection. And depending on what it is, there are some key themes, but there are some four key triggers that tend to put us into our story. And I'll share those first because that it all is related to protection. So when we are feeling tired, which can both be emotional or physical depletion, feeling anxious. And often with anxiety comes some level of uncertainty because we don't always have the tools or learn how to deal with uncertainty. So it can feel unsafe and brings up a lot of anxiety. Feeling inadequate, and that can be where we feel like we're not good enough or not enough in many different areas of our life. And so, it doesn't necessarily mean we feel inadequate in all these different places. It could be just like certain situations, and then feeling lonely. And even though we might have a great support system around us, we can still feel isolated, alone, or lonely. And I wanted to share those because if we think about, I'll use inadequate as an example. If you are working on a project or something that feels hard, or you're a beginner at something, it may bring up this trigger of feeling inadequate or not good enough. The protection comes in because if you don't know where to start or you feel like you're not going to be good enough, that's where some of that procrastination comes in. We don't get started. Sometimes people will talk about, I go to the refrigerator to be productive or to distract because you don't want to feel inadequate, right? Like that is not a comfortable feeling. And that might also bring up some anxiety or uncertainty. And so the food comes in to kind of ground us or to help us manage or through some of these emotions that and these triggers that feel really uncomfortable. So that's one example. And I'll see if you have any questions around that. And I can go into some of those others if you'd like.
Well, and I'm curious too, because like for instance, like I do not feel like I'm a big emotional eater, except for when I'm feeling I'm looking at these here that I wrote down that you said. I don't think it's an inadequate. I don't think it's sometimes tired, like emotionally tired, I will. am probably lonely, but like if I get anxious, anxiety, I will not eat. Like I get my stomach gets in knots. I just don't eat at all. So, but some of these other ones I can see, which is good that you kind of highlighted them because what's helpful there is you can see your patterns. So you know, like, oh, I'm the anxious eater. Oh, I'm the tired emotional eater. I'm the when I get lonely, right? That you're seeking that protection, right? That. Okay, so what is the question I was thinking of as you were talking about this is the chemicals in your body too, because right, like as you eat food, depending on what you're eating, obviously, if it's got a high amount of sugar or whatever, like I'm not the expert on the like nutrition piece of that, but like there is something that's physically changing inside of your body, right, at the time that you're eating and digesting food and stuff that probably is impacting that, maybe giving you feel good chemicals and stuff. Is that true?
Yeah, it could be. And there is the physiological piece as well as the emotional piece. I really focus more on that emotional, and there is some physiological stuff we can look at, but of course there is some legitimate energy that comes from sugar, right? If you are feeling emotionally or physically depleted, then sugar is an energy source. So, yes, it can help and give you some of that dopamine hit and stuff. A lot of times too, people will say like, "Oh, I'm addicted to sugar. I'm addicted to carbs or whatever." And I like to look at that at the lens is, yes, it's possible that there is an addiction. However, also is it that you have become so accustomed to use the sugar or the carbs to numb out from something, to replenish your like to refill your cup? Whatever it is, there's a lot of metaphor for the way that we eat. An example of that, and also in terms of the protection, I had a client who was in a relationship that was somewhat emotionally abusive, and also she accommodated a lot. So she was giving so much to the relationship, but wasn't getting much back. So after she had a binge one day, I asked her, I'm like, "Are you feeling depleted? Like, how are you feeling right now?" And she's like, "I am really exhausted and depleted." And as we talked about it, she said, like, she just could eat and eat and eat and would never feel full. And I said to her, "Do you feel like your cup is broken?" She's like, "Laura, my cup is so broken. There are holes everywhere and it's just oozing everywhere." So if you think of that imagery and she's continuing to try to fill it up with food, but the food's just oozing through those holes. That's the reason she has this insatiable hunger, and the reason she's never going to feel satisfied from the food because it's not the food that she needs or is craving, right? So some of what we worked on was how could she find win-wins, or how could she find collaborative solutions that would work for her and her partner? Ultimately, she ended up leaving that relationship because she realized it wasn't great for her. But there was also protection in that her eating, and it made a lot of sense that she was eating and would have these binges because she couldn't feel satisfied. And it was because the food wasn't really what she needed.
Right. So, happy ending for her. She was able to, get what she needed, right? Versus continually trying to fill a cup that was going to always be leaking because that really wasn't the root. That really wasn't the source. And I'm all about getting to the source. Like, let's get to the source and let's quit all this bullshit where we're just like trying to do the things that everybody else is telling us to do and trying to follow these plans and try to, do this or that, right? If you don't work with what's going on inside of you, nothing is going to change. And that's the hard part, right? Because it's actually a lot of times I think I personally, from my experience, people think that just using willpower as a discipline is going to be effective. And I totally disagree with that. And I think that willpower is like, for most people, not very effective. There might be some people who can kind of drum up some of that willpower and like literally make stuff happen for themselves. But, what do you think? Because I don't really subscribe to the whole willpower thing because it's like only running 5% of the show. So what do you think?
So I feel like most of my clients are type A and have a lot of discipline and willpower in so many other areas of their life, but the food area is one that they just can't seem to keep it consistent. And I feel like willpower is not the issue. Because if you can have discipline in all these other areas and you can have all the success, you can put your mind to making things happen and it works out. Why is it around food that it's not happening? And again, because willpower is not the problem. And an example of that is like with this other client, with this broken and empty cup. No amount of willpower, discipline, or white knuckling is going to help her resist the food, right? Because there's so much more that she was craving and needing from that, or wanting from, not wanting, but needing from the food, or she was hoping to get from the food, I guess I should say. So yeah, if we don't address why we're turning to food to begin with, we can try to white knuckle. We can try to remove the food. But if we're not identifying how we're turning to food as safety or for protection, then it's only going to last short term, which is probably why there are some people who are listening who have had short-term results or even have been able to stick with a way of eating for 2 years, but then something happens and takes them off track. And I would just venture to guess that most likely there was some transition in their life. There was a big trigger, their story was activated in some way. And if we don't know we have the story, if we don't know about what our triggers are, then it's going to continue to show up and to happen. And so we want to be able to build resilience. And once we figure out what is actually leading you to turn to food, then we can start to shift and revise our stories so that we don't keep reacting in the same way that we have
Right.
throughout our life.
So I'm going to bring up something because I think it is important to bring up because I also truly believe that you should love yourself at any stage from where you're at, right? So if you are overweight, accepting and loving yourself at that point, right, is really, really key. You know, if you say, I love myself at where I'm at and I don't want to lose weight and I don't need to lose weight and I actually prefer my body style type, whatever, in this manner, I think that that's just an important little thing to note here in this conversation is that not everybody has the desire to lose weight, and that's okay too, right? Some people do and some people don't. And some, you know, I'll tell you this, this is a funny story, but I'm not considered overweight, like doctor wise, like health wise, at all. But sometimes, like you're getting ready to have your period, or you're feeling a little like you ate too much that weekend, and you're just feeling a little fluffy in areas or whatever. And I've gone through that myself. But when I work through the things about my self-worth and the things that I know are good values. And that I'm worthy about as on like on a soul level. It was weird because one day I was feeling that a little bit fluffy like that. And then a couple of days had gone by. I've been working on my self-worth and I stepped out of the shower, saw myself in the mirror, and I was like, man, I look really good. And I had nothing had changed on my body. Like nothing. I didn't even been working out. I hadn't been eating healthier, none of that. So I just wanted to mention that because I know that there probably are people who will listen to this that need the support and need to know how, not just with like the Google search, to actually make changes, right, to become healthier or to lose weight if that is their choice. But on the other side, there are people who are just like, you know what? This is me. This is who I am. I love myself and I'm fine with it. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I have a lot to add, but I'm glad you mentioned that because while my story and journey is around weight, it's not the work that I do with Truce with Food is not necessarily about weight loss. It is more about the relationship with food. And weight loss, if that's a goal of yours, tends to be a side effect for people. But also throughout the process, it is around reclaiming cast off parts of ourselves that we had to abandon or cast off. To belong is one piece of that. And another one is body image stuff. And so I'm so glad you brought that up because there have been times, and not only did I address my relationship with food throughout Truce with Food, but also my body as well. And there were days for me where I would look in the mirror, feel really comfortable and confident in my body. And then, like 3 hours later, and I'm not kidding, in the same day, in the same clothes, I'd be like, Ooh, I'm fat. I need to lose weight. I need to start getting on a program tomorrow. And what do I need to do to get back, on track or whatever? My body didn't change in those 3 hours. So what did? And so what for me, I identified was this was typically happening earlier on in my business. I've been coaching for 9 years. So this was probably about 6 to 9 years ago that this was happening. But what I identified from doing my work with my health coach was those crisis moments around my body or those feeling fat moments would come up when I was feeling a new level of uncertainty or vulnerability in my business. And I had no idea that I was projecting that discomfort onto my body and my weight because it was kind of a comfortable resting place of something that I could control and fix, even though I would ruminate on it for days and not actually take action or do anything about it. But it was a more like quote unquote comfortable, right? Like that was a protective way of let me focus on that instead of the vulnerability and the uncertainty that I have no control over.
Yeah.
So I wanted to share that because a lot of times people will say, like, they focus more on their body. And also, there can be some connection between we can connect our worth or value to the size of our bodies as well. And there's a lot to unpack with all of that. And ultimately, what tends to happen for people as we go through the Truce with Food process is not only does their relationship with food shift, but also how they feel in their bodies or about themselves also tends to shift as well.
Yeah, and there's so many different aspects of people's relationships with food too. I mean, when we talk, you could talk about eating disorders and, people who don't who dissociate from the food and don't want to eat it at all, right? Or who binge eat or, different. There's so many different layers to it. But ultimately, what I love, and then I want to bring it back to, is protection, right? We, your brain is constantly trying to keep you feeling safe, right? So, when we don't have a truce with food, like you're saying, or we don't have this relationship or even understanding about it, food is required for us to live. But a lot of times, I don't think people consciously think about being in a relationship with the food that you're eating. It's just, I mean, using the food to eat, to serve a purpose, to survive, to have health or whatever, right? And I love this idea of having food as like almost like another person in a relationship with you. I had a money coach tell me about this too. And she's like, you need to have money dates with your money. Like you need to pretend like it's you're in a relationship with it. Are you treating it right? Are you talking to it nicely? Are you behaving with it correctly? All the different things. Like if you were in a relationship with it, and then you're saying, let's have a truce, right? This truce with your food. So the protection piece is so important, and it's really, really fascinating to me because I love how the brain works. But what kind of ways do you see people using food as protection? Like all, like just different ones, maybe things that you've experienced from your clients and things.
Yeah, and it obviously will vary, and there can be so much nuance to it as well. Sometimes it just doesn't even realize, you don't even realize that it's protective. I'll give a few different examples of one client. One of the things that we do throughout the process too is get clear on what our values are. And so there's often we have been conditioned and socialized throughout our life to believe in certain things, right? Like the harder you work, the more effort you put in, the more results you'll get. That was one that I was really conditioned with. Or maybe in your house, you were told to stay small or don't speak up, or you're a kid, just fade into the background and be seen but not heard. So we internalize a lot of that, right? So you learn not to speak up. And if that continues throughout your adult life, what's a way to silence yourself? To use food. Like if you have something to say, let me just eat instead of saying it. I actually had a client the other day say that at work, she would go into the break room at 3 o'clock every day and look for a snack. And when we talked about why does that make sense and like looking at her story, she said, I swallow my tongue all day. And so I go into the break room to basically eat and continue to swallow my tongue. Like that's where some of that metaphor comes in, right? So she's protecting herself from feeling like she may say something that could put her at risk for being seen as the bad girl, right? Or a bad employee or combative or whatever. So she has silenced herself basically from eating. Or also, some people will talk about being out with people that they don't know very well. So going to a social situation and there's food around and they'll be grazing around and end up not being able to stop with some of the snacks that are there. And when we dive into that, they feel uncomfortable because they don't know some of these people and they don't know if they're going to be accepted or if they're going to say something that they're going to be judged for. Or maybe they're recently, another client was talking about how all the women that she was with were married and had kids and she doesn't have kids. So she wasn't able to connect with them and didn't feel like she had much to contribute. So instead she ate so that she was still being productive and doing something and was kind of fitting in, but didn't put herself at risk of being rejected or judged in some way. So there's so many more examples, but I'll pause with those and see
Yeah,
if you
okay.
have any thoughts or questions on those.
Where does the when you said, we always start with like clarifying the values.
Oh,
So
yeah.
where does that kind of come into
Oh,
the
yeah.
process?
I went off track of my
But that is
thoughts.
okay.
So with the values, once we can identify where we want to look at is where is there a gap between the values that were instilled in you as a kid and what your values are today? And the reason I brought that up is because one of my clients, she was isolating a lot. She wouldn't even go out to the grocery store. She would send her husband because she didn't feel comfortable going and being seen because she was in a bigger body than she wanted to be, and she felt like people were going to judge her for that. So instead, she stayed inside and didn't go out very much. And she would eat. And when we looked at her values, some of the three key values that came up were collaboration, connection, and community. How much was she living outside of her values?
A lot.
Right? And so once we identified what her values were, she was like, oh my God, I am isolating. I am not putting myself out there and getting that connection, and I'm really missing that. And so she was feeling isolated. So once we identified what her values were, she was able to test and experiment with what happens when I get that connection? What happens when I focus on collaboration and really grounding into those? And so she signed up for like a dodgeball class and a group and would go to the grocery store and was going to do dance classes with her husband. Like she started doing so many more things and would say yes to going to events instead of saying no. And the reason, so when we think about the protection and how she was isolating and stuff, it was a perceived protection that she might be judged and feel exposed. But then when she realized, but I really value connection, collaboration, and community, and there's this gap between how I'm showing up and what's important to me, that was a big shift for her.
Yeah, that's so. I love that because I talk a lot about values with my clients too. And when you know what your top values are, and then if you can see that you're misaligned and you're not really living in alignment with those values, it's like this huge light bulb moment for people. They're like, oh my gosh, like I say that I really value this, but I'm behaving in a totally different way. Like we'll brainstorm all kinds of values and then knock them off until we get down to like the top like 3 to 5 values. And people sometimes are mind blown by, I didn't realize that I really value that high because I'm not behaving in the way that align with those values. And it can be extremely, extremely eye-opening and helpful to create change because when you realize that there's this disconnect, you want to bring things back into balance and you want to try to take action to move you towards aligning towards those values. So my question then is, how do you, like, just for people who are listening, what would you suggest or what advice would you give them if they're like hearing this for the first time, like, ooh, like maybe, yeah, this is me. And like, ooh, maybe this is something that I'm dealing with. What, how do you start to become aware of your relationship with food and your patterns and like things like that? How do you even start?
Yeah. One thing that can be helpful is I love to give people a tool of thinking of those triggers that we talked about, starting even there. So if we can use the acronym TAIL, which is tired, anxious, inadequate, and lonely, and you can either think back to the last time you went off track with your eating or had a bad or hard food day or eating day. And bad or hard could be, and that's like bad in quotes, because it's usually the judgment we have of ourselves. But bad or hard meaning like, did you have a lot of self-talk around what you were eating, a lot of buildup, and felt like you had some guilt or shame around it, whatever that looks like for you. And what we want to do is look at not necessarily the events themselves, but what did those events trigger in you? So it could be you want to look at the whole day, not just the times that you ate, because again, if the eating is the symptom that something happened, what we want to look at is what actually took you off track with your eating. So we want to look at what did it trigger in you? And it can be from, let's say you wake up in the morning and you feel behind already. Or you try on clothes and they don't fit. What does that make you feel? What does that trigger in you when you feel behind or when your clothes don't fit? Or if you get an email from somebody, what does that trigger in you? Did somebody get your name wrong? Does that trigger something in you? So we want to map out the whole day and look and see what triggers came up. And it can be helpful to do that because a lot of times, if we're feeling like it's willpower or discipline, it's eye-opening to feel like to realize, wow, there's all these triggers that are happening throughout the day. And it isn't something wrong with me. Like there are actual things that are happening that are taking me off track with my eating. So that's where we can start before getting into obviously the process that I go through with clients, goes in a lot more depth, but that's a good place to start to just even start to identify and observe yourself and what is taking you off track.
Yeah, I absolutely agree and love that. And I talk about that too, is the first step is awareness, because if you just keep doing what you've always been doing your whole life, rinse and repeat and diet and go off the diet and try this new fad and try that thing and do this, nothing's really changing. You're just repeating the same behaviors over and over again, right? But if you could even take, like I'll tell my clients, just take the whole week before we meet next time. And I just want you to pay attention. When you get triggered by something, pay attention to what's going on in your mind. What are you thinking about, right? And like, I love the word you used, observe, because that is key. It's taking the judgment out of it, and it's taking the what word do I want to use? It's taking out all of the like noise and all the extra stuff that we kind of the meaning that we put on things and like all of that. It's just like being a scientist. Like in what you're saying, like look at your day, take a look at it. You could even at the end of the day, like write out all the things and like look at it and observe it, like a scientific study that you're trying to figure out, right? Because I think for most people, it is like we just don't have the tools. Like no one's really giving us the tools. And we think we have the tools because we're told to do this diet and we're told to take this out and we're told to do this therapy or that or whatever, right? But those aren't the answers are inside of us, right? We got to find them by being observant, like you were saying, and being aware of these things that are happening on a level that we might not consciously day to day be fully aware of.
Totally,
Yeah.
for sure. And one of the things that we do, and we don't really, I don't usually talk about this necessarily. It's more of like the process that we kind of go through is like the try a different diet or brush your teeth before bed. Those are technical changes and things that you just have to learn, or you can observe and just not observe, but like you can get more information or whatever and try it. And like that's the type of change. What we really want is more of an adaptive change where you have to basically we relearn how we're showing up or what is triggering us and how do we adapt throughout our lives and adapt the way that we are making meaning or showing up. And that's what we really want to focus on is more of those adaptive, it's an adaptive process versus like a technical change process.
Well, it's interesting that you use that word adaptive because I have a trauma-informed certification. And when people are experienced or have experienced trauma, they adapt to the trauma and they use strategies to cope with the things that they've dealt with, right? So it's almost like what you're talking about when the relearning is like we are like deconstructing the adaptations, right? Like we have created these trauma adaptations, right? And I believe a lot of times things like this, like we're talking about today, are coping strategies. They're to help you feel safe. They are trauma adaptations. And I'm not here to say what kind of trauma you had or whatever, but you know, whether it's something very, very small, big T trauma, small T trauma, or whatever, right? It's still trauma to whoever's gone through it,
Correct.
right? So there's no judgment on the level of it, but. But when you were talking about the adaptation part, I was like, oh, this is like deconstructing and like it's literally like rewiring all the adaptations that you created to help you feel protected and safe. And now it's like, okay, now let's reverse it or let's like deconstruct it. I don't know what word that would be appropriate to use, but I like that you use that word. So, well, okay. So thank you for this information. It's been super, super helpful. Was there anything else that you wanted to add before I ask you my fun final question that I always ask every guest?
One other thing in terms of what people can do as well is there, I do have a master class as well on my website. And in that master class, it goes into a lot more detail about a unconscious cycle we're often in when we go off track with our eating. And I've already talked about two of those here, which is the trigger and the story is the start of the cycle. But I find that it can be helpful to even if you're not in a place where you're able to observe where your triggers are and stuff like that, the masterclass can be helpful to even just understand where you have a cycle. Because sometimes when having that language and being able to identify that the cycle even exists, even that can be freeing for people to be like, oh, this is what's happening when I'm going off track. And again, it just helps reduce some of that guilt or shame of like, oh, there's actually a reason that this is happening. And now being able to identify what that is, or even knowing that it's there, can be really helpful for people. So I just wanted to share that tool, that as another tool for people. And it goes into more detail, not just around the cycle and some other stuff there too, but that is a free resource as well
Okay.
if anybody.
Thank you. And I will link that if you want to look at this masterclass that Laura's talking about, I'll link it in the show notes for you. You can access it there, as well as ways to contact you, which I'm assuming Instagram, Facebook, places like that. I'll link all that in the show notes as well. So, to my final question, because I always ask all my guests this question, just to kind of change the vibe of the podcast a little bit. What is something, if you don't mind to share, that not a lot of people know about you?
There's a few different ones that I can think of, but I will go with I started ice skating when I was 18 and would I had three coaches at one point, would skate 4 times a week, and I was doing freestyle, which is like jumps and spins, moves in the field, which are for testing, and then ice dancing as well. And because I started when I was 18, I was an adult. So people would ask if I would compete, but I would be, well, actually, you don't become an adult skier until you're 23. So I would have been competing against 5-year-olds, but I was doing testing and I tested jumps and spins and moves. And then I got up about five, I think it was 4 or 5 levels of ice dancing before I had to stop for it because of my back. But I was doing single jumps up to the Lutz, if anybody knows
Oh my
anything
God.
about jumps. And I was able to do a camel spin, sit spin, not that they were good, and like a back spins and forward spins as well.
That is so wild. I would have never guessed that. How did you like what happened that you just decided at 18 I'm gonna learn how to ice skate? Like that is just I'm shocked. Like, I mean, because usually it's these people who start out when they're like 3, 4, or 5 years old. They do these things throughout their whole lives. And you're like, okay, I'm 18. I'm going to start ice skating.
Yeah. So I was a sedentary kid, and aside my sport in high school, I'm just gonna throw out a whole bunch of random facts. My sport, quote unquote, in high school was marching band. So that tells you how active I was as a kid. And I also faked my way through, or told in fifth grade, told my PE teacher that I had asthma, so I didn't have to run the mile. So that's how sedentary I was. So when I was in college, my freshman year, I remember sitting in the dorm hallway with my friends, and we were talking, and I'm like, I want to get more active, but I just am not a sporty person. I don't like sports. So we were literally brainstorming all different types of activities that any of us could do. And we had to take one credit, like PE type of classes in college as well. So I found ice skating as one of the classes, ice skating one. And I was like, me and two of my friends, we went and took the class, and I fell in love with it and hired a coach right then. And that the rest was history.
That is amazing. I love this question that I ask of people because, like, you just never know what you're going to find out about people. And it just changes changes the whole trajectory of the podcast after we're done talking about all these deep emotional things that we talk about. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your wisdom and your coaching. And I hope that if you guys have any need in this area, specifically if this aligns with you, if you're shaking your head yes, please reach out to Laura. This is something that she's been doing for a really long time. And of course, it's something that's near and dear to me because of the roots of it and where it comes from. Because I totally believe that we got to get to the source. We can't just keep patching holes and doing the same things that we do all the time. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Great.